Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First this morning, criminals will have illegal assets seized more quickly under a range of reforms being discussed by ministers today. Let's get more on this and other matters on the Cabinet agenda. I'm joined by Jack Horgan-Jones, who's political correspondent with the Irish Times. Good morning, Jack.
Morning, Claire.
So on the Criminal Assets Bureau front first, will you tell us what's planned and why it is deemed necessary to take these measures?
Yeah, so people will probably be familiar with the operations of the Criminal Assets Bureau, and there's a couple of pieces of legislation that were introduced alongside the introduction of CAB back in 1996, including the Proceeds of Crime Act, and that has been reviewed a couple of times since, most recently I think in 2016, and Minister for Justice Jim O'Callaghan is bringing the latest review to Cabinet. The readout on this is effectively that it's going to kind of strengthen CAB's ability to target the proceeds of crime and also improve the efficiency of their processes. Now, within that, there's a couple of interesting little wrinkles, particularly the reduction from 7 years to 2 in the time it takes between a judicial determination that assets are the proceeds of crime and the time at which they can actually be disposed of. So basically speeding up the process by which something can be disposed of after it's determined to be a proceeds of crime. And then also immediately appointing a receiver once that initial determination is made, so that effectively the respondent, the person who is judged to have the asset as a result of crimes, cannot continue to benefit from those assets while they're waiting to dispose of them.
So clearly they feel that there's an issue here over delays in the system and the period of time between the finding being made and action being taken.
Yeah, something like that, all right. I mean, I think that on the one hand, you could make the argument that this is a piece of kind of legislative housekeeping. It's obvious that they reviewed it a couple of times since, and this is just the latest in a series of reviews. But on the other hand, this is a government, and particularly Minister for Justice, who has made great emphasis of kind of being tougher on crime, on improving the facilities of the guards and of other agencies, in this instance, the Criminal Assets Bureau, to kind of clamp down on criminals. And this would definitely fall under that rubric.
Mm. Now, another interesting matter that ministers are going to be talking about today, these new guidelines which will allow smaller apartments, higher numbers of smaller units in individual developments. So the aim here is to cut the cost of construction and make it more attractive for developers to build these things.
Yeah, so this is something that has been in the works for a couple of months and something that we reported on in the Irish Times last month. But what is going to Cabinet today is a whole bunch of reforms. You've named some of them there. Now, some of the details are quite kind of complex and technical, but effectively what you're looking at is reforms that will make it easier for developers to put more apartments on the same piece of land. And they're going to do that by allowing smaller apartments in some instances. So I think that the size of the studio apartment is coming down and the size of the three bed is coming down, but they're also tweaking things like the number of lifts, the length of corridors, all these kind of things. Dual aspect, which is something that people might be familiar with, that's the rule that you have to have natural light through openable windows on two sides of the apartment. The stipulations around that are going to come down. The net effect of this, the government hopes, is to bring down construction costs by an average of €50,000 per unit and up to €100,000 per unit in some instances. The reason being that they want to bring down the cost of construction because they're facing an absolute drop off in the number of apartments being built. I mean, I was looking at some of the stats yesterday, and really the number of commencements has cratered to a level. The apartment commencements has cratered to a level not seen since February 2021 in the most recent data. So it's nigh on a dead stop that they're seeing. So this is a kind of throw everything at it type of solution, and hope that in 4 or 5 years they're looking at significantly increased numbers of commencements and completions.
And when you think, Jack, you know, will there be pushback against these sorts of measures? I mean, the government is very much at one when it comes to ramping up construction and ramping up production in that sector, right?
Yeah, I think inevitably there will be pushback against it. I think we've seen some pushback against it already, not just from the opposition. I know that the Social Democrats and Sinn Féin and Labour were all out over the weekend criticising these proposals, but also from some voices within the industry, particularly on the architectural side. They're making the argument that there's a trade-off here in terms of quality, in terms of the spec that you're building on a hope that you might increase output. I think that the government's assessment, I suppose, is that the situation is so bad and the effects of that are so acute for the man or woman in the street that if you make the kind of political bet that people will accept that trade-off, on the hope that you get more units down the road, then it'll be worth it. I suppose the open question is whether this will actually improve output. And that's the big leverage play that we're seeing in this and in also other reforms like the rent pressure zones. It's political pain now in the hope that the market reforms are effective 3, 4, 5 years from now.
Now, this story on the front of the Mail today, Jack. Micheál, my flight was not switched for the Cork match. So this is about the Taoiseach's attendance at the Cork hurling semi-final on Saturday and the opposition raising questions now about whether his flight was changed in order for him to make it from his trade mission to Japan to be back in time for the match in Croke Park. What's being said about all of this by both sides?
Yeah, so it's an interesting one. So it seems that the original plan was for the Taoiseach to kind of fly from Japan and go west through Dubai and onwards to Dublin. And at some point, the government is saying a week before he left, a decision was made to fly east and go from Osaka to Toronto and on to Dublin, which actually takes longer in terms of travel time. But because you're kind of traveling back in time and you go over the international dateline, you arrive in Dublin earlier. At least that's my vague understanding of how the international dateline works. But effectively, the opposition are questioning whether this change in schedule was to get him to the match on time, the match being the Dublin versus Cork hurling semi-final, which he attended and put up social media posts and so on about afterwards. Now, a spokesman for the Taoiseach was saying overnight to the Daily Mail that the flight changes were as a result of security concerns. Obviously, there's been no shortage of projectiles flying back and forth across the Middle East, and there's been apparently some flight cancellations arising from that, so they wanted to avoid that. But the opposition are persisting with questioning this. They're now saying, look, we want to know exactly what the security concerns were. Paddy Tobin, the leader of AIM2, saying that, and also they want to know what the cost of rejigging those flights was. The government saying that the figure is not available for those flights being rebooked, saying it's not yet reconciled. But a little while to run on this yet, as those two other pieces of information are to be teased out.
Right. But there are some saying that he would have made it back to the match anyway, had he gone the other way on the original flight, right?
Yeah, so just looking at it here, the original booking via Dubai scheduled to land at 12:15 on Saturday, July 5th. Now, I'm not sure exactly what time thrown was. I think it was about 4 p.m. So he probably would have made it then, wouldn't he? So
likely, yeah, likely. Anyway, as you said, there'd be more to run on that one. Just coming to trade and tariffs and so on, the United States now saying that it is really close to finalising several deals, trade pacts in the coming days. And then it's going to impose higher tariff rates on the other countries, the ones that don't manage to reach a deal. The mood music, Jack, from our own ministers, would you say it's relatively positive at this stage, at this moment in time?
I wouldn't go so far as to say it's relatively positive. I mean, they're kind of accepting of the facts on the ground. The facts on the ground when it comes to the Trump 2.0 White House being that you're going to get a lot of unpredictability, and that the only certainty is a degree of uncertainty. Their preference, I think their clear preference, would have been to have an outline deal or a kind of a blueprint deal on the table for this Wednesday and agreed to in terms of EU-US trade, similar to the kind of framework that was struck between the US and the UK. But now that doesn't look like it's going to happen. So while the shoe hasn't dropped and the massive impact of 50% tariffs hasn't crystallized, I think that they're still living with the costs of uncertainty. And that is a drag on investment. It's a drag on firms making decisions. And ultimately, I think they accept that there is going to be some degree of tariff coming down the tracks. They just don't know exactly what or exactly when. And that's just the water that they have to swim in. And they're not delighted about it, to be honest.
Okay, well, let's find out more about that now. Jack, thanks so much. Jack Horgan-Jones there from the Irish Times. But I'm also joined by former US Ambassador to the EU, Anthony Gardner. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning.
So there are reports this morning in Politico that the US has offered an agreement to the EU that would keep a 10% baseline tariff on all EU goods, and there would be some exceptions for sensitive sectors such as aircraft and spirits, so they would be left off the list. Does that sound like the basis of a deal to you?
Well, that would be a surprisingly positive outcome if that, in fact, is the deal, because it would basically be similar to what the UK got. And I say surprising because we know what Trump thinks about the European Union, that it's worse than China, that's his words, but smaller. And his objections about the EU, not just its tariffs, but also its digital economy and its food standards and its VAT and so on. So it would be surprising and a good news if the EU actually ends up with that deal. And I'm assuming the EU has also offered to lower some industrial tariffs and to buy more commodities and liquefied natural gas and defense articles from the US. However, one has to see the small print, whether there will be also sectoral tariffs that will kick in, it'll be substantially larger. But again, if that is true, it
Anthony, we're having problems with your line. Will we try and fix it maybe and come back to Anthony? We'll try and get Anthony on a better line back after this.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Anthony Gardner back with us, former US ambassador to the EU. And you were telling us, Anthony, that if this is right and true, that 10% wouldn't be a bad deal, although there will be sectors that we have to watch out for. But we do need to be very careful here, because I was just reading the backstory to the deal between the United States and Japan, which all looked as though it was going very well after the April announcement, after Freedom Day, and then fell apart spectacularly. And they're now facing 25%. This is despite Donald Trump hailing the fantastic relationship between the two countries. He now says that that is all spoiled. So I suppose it just shows us which way this could go.
Cool, completely. Now, I mean, there's only one person who's making decisions, and it's Donald Trump, and it depends on what side of the bed he's gotten out of in the morning. So yeah, absolutely, one needs to be very careful. But what I was saying is, if that indeed is the case, it would be quite positive.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think the United States has extended now past the 9th of July onto the 1st of August? What's the logic there?
Well, I think a lot of people realize that the original timetable just wasn't achievable. I mean, to get to an agreement in a few months is extremely tough. I've been involved in quite a few trade agreements. These take a long time. Even getting to a heads of terms, which was the case of the UK, five pages, rather general heads of terms, it took a number of months. So it was, I think, inevitable they were going to push this back to August, as I understand. And they want to keep the timetable tight to maximize pressure, which is obvious. I suspect there might be even some slippage there.
So you think it might be pushed out beyond the 1st of August?
Well, possibly. I mean, look, what Scott Bessent, the U.S. Treasury Secretary, was saying is that those who are considered to be negotiating in faith, quote unquote, will be accorded more time. And those who the president considers are not negotiating in good faith will just be sent letters, which we've seen. It's been hit with rather high tariffs right now because the president decided, well, we're just not going to bother, you know, extending the deadline.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of this theory that Donald Trump's aim was to split and divide the EU and it just hasn't worked?
Oh, well, certainly he has tried to do that in a much more aggressive fashion than any prior president in history. He does see the EU as a very fragmented, weak group of countries with divergent interests, which in some cases is true. I think the EU has done a pretty good job in holding together despite these different interests. I mean, each country is pleading for its export industries, which you'd expect, including Ireland, but giving the European Commission its prerogative to negotiate on behalf of all 27. That's a very tough line to walk so far successfully.
It's a tough line to walk, but there's great strength in that position as well, isn't it? Isn't there? And it gives the EU fairly significant leverage against the United States in these talks.
Absolutely. Look, it's really important for every member state government to understand, and I say this as someone who's had one foot out and one foot in, so to speak. I would say one foot in because I'm also a European national. I've lived in Europe for 30 years. I've seen how the European Union can negotiate effectively. When you are split and fragment and plead your own case, you weaken your ability to get a good outcome. It is absolutely fundamentally important that the Commission has the tools and even the weapons on the table to
tell Donald Trump, look, we can actually retaliate in a much more effective way than most countries, including the UK. Mm-hmm. That was the problem. One of the problems of Brexit, the UK is left and has much less leverage. There are tools in the toolkit that the EU has that are really significant, including the international bulk procurement legislation that could restrict the access of U.S. companies to the very rich and large EU public procurement market. It has an anti-coercion mechanism, which basically allows the EU to do anything. It is important that EU has these tools on the table and convinces the United States we are ready to use them. And I think von der Leyen and other members of the, she's the president of the commission and other members of the commission said, everything is on the table. That's really important.
Mm-hmm. Well, Anthony, I'm sure we'll catch up again as this all progresses, but thank you for your time for now. Anthony Gardner there, former US ambassador to the EU. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to take a look at some of the most expensive items in your shopping basket. But after the break, why some legitimate text messages are being flagged as scams.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.